Come on, knock on our door.
Come and knock on our door.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been waiting for you.
We've been wanting to tell you all about what we're watching too.
Hey guys, it's Drew from the Real Feels Podcast here, just to give you a quick little update on this episode here. Now, we had some technical snafus. I had a new microphone. Wasn't really sure how it was going to work with getting the guys back together to record. I'd only been using it for my mini episodes, and in between, what have you been watching? And especially when I recorded by myself with other folks and, you know, brought it on into the episode for the interim time before we were coming back. So there are some audio issues, but hey, you can still get a great episode out of all this, and we're going to come back more fiery, better than ever, with our upcoming episode for our archaeology, you know, subgenre, with Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So guys, sit back, relax. Thank you for coming back and listening to us. And as always, you're the realist.
Welcome back to the Real Feels Podcast with Jack, Drew, and Nathan.
It's been a long time, but we're finally back.
I'm so happy.
Now.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Feels Podcast. Kind of. This is a one of our what are you watching episodes. We've kind of with the old conversation podcasting lubricants
get better,
get going again. As if you are a fan, which I doubt, you may have noticed also, which I doubt, that we have not been together as a threesome in nigh on a year.
Almost a year. June.
I said Nyon.
And that's not to say that we haven't been around each other. We did have...
Red Hamsmas.
There was no disagreements or I'm the paterfamilias or anything like that. But life had to go on and podcasts had to take a break.
Yeah.
But we're back. The boys are back in town. In what way, like, better to kind of get back into it than to kind of recap just probably more recently? We're not going to do the full span because I think Drew's been holding it down on his...
I've been holding it down.
500,000 nights of horror.
Yes, I have.
But... Still want to hear what you've been watching, what you've been listening to, what you've been reading.
Yes. I absolutely
did Nathan join a book
Nathan
club?
Nathan joined a book club.
Wait, no, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I swear, I have books.
Do they have many, pictures?
Not many leather-bound books.
Not all of them.
Is this the new woman that got you into the book club? If so, I'm going to have to talk to her because I've been buying you books for years that you've never read any of them.
And we have them. They are... let's rewind a little bit. So, book club that I'm in is with our company, and they do a lot of like motivational books.
We've talked about this before.
You know, like... And... They do some more like middle of the road where it's a little bit of a story, a little bit of motivational, kind of like The Choice.
A little bit country, a little bit rock and roll.
The Endurance about Shackleton, read about that. Very interesting. But I also have got my son into the library. And so we have gone and we'll gather books for him. And every time I go look at books for myself and I say, no, Nathan, you are not allowed to select a book from the library until you read at least the two books that you have been given, the Dresden Files and we have books at home.
Books at home.
The books at home, which they're great. And I actually need to dive into them. But guys, what have we been watching?
I've got a list.
I have a letterbox.
Do we want to like kind of at each person do like
round
one,
robin?
We sure. talk a little bit, and the next person. Yep.
I'll start off. So one of the first things, and I'll start off at like the bottom, and then we're gonna work our way up to something good. So recently, Night Swim came out on Peacock.
Working on your Night Swim.
Bow, bow. Thank you. Mm. I was actually really kind of excited for Night Swim at the beginning when I first saw like half a trailer. I was like, ooh, this looks intriguing. Let's go. And upon watching it, very disappointing.
I haven't seen it.
I was kind of let down. If you just want like a basic gist, it's if Amityville had a pool, and that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a haunted pool. That's all
Way
it is.
Sell it, Drew.
It's a haunted.
I mean, that's all. Nothing it is. More. It's fine.
Nothing less.
Drain it. Duh.
That's it.
Problem
well,
solved.
Since we're doing movies. Did either of you guys see Saltburn?
No.
No.
Oh, dear God. So.
Is it a next level?
Anna has been wanting to watch it for a while. And it's
Prime.
It is on Prime. Barry Kehoe, you know, very popular actor. He did a bit part in Masters of the Air, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. Has been in a lot of things lately. It's a bizarre movie where Barry Keoghan sort of plays like your lower middle class person who has gotten into, you know, one of the Cambridge Oxford universities upon his laurels, his merit, and then meets the fabulously wealthy heir of Saltburn Manor. And I thought the movie was going to be, and it sort of portrayed itself along the way as sort of a commentary about the vulgarity of excess.
Okay.
But it turned into something much different. I'm not sure if I feel good about that different, but it was also one of the most awkward movies I've watched with my wife in a long, long, long time.
See. Now, Nathan has shower water. Saltburn has bath water.
Cum bath water.
Oh.
Scum bath water.
Yeah.
Oh.
There is a famous scene where Barry Kehoe gets in the bathtub after the heir has the shared bathroom, after the heir has jerked off in the bathtub. And he kind of slurps, like he's trying to get some parts per million of this air inside of him. And that's not the most disturbing thing.
Is it the five minutes of naked dancing after the credits?
No, that was actually like that was like sort of like the candles
all,
on the
that
birthday
was actually
cake.
Quite touching.
The twirling penis.
But when everybody leaves the
Helicopter?
Funeral of okay. somebody and Barry Kehoe cries on the dirt and then the grave, it like and that again, it's not even the most disturbing what? Thing that happens.
This is why I've avoided this shit.
And the director's like, yeah, keep rolling. This is good.
So
oh my God.
I'm not unhappy I watched it. I'm just unhappy that it turned out the way that I didn't think it would. I thought it was gonna be a little bit more cerebral as far as again sort of the class and culture differences, but no, it was pretty much all planned out from the start.
Jeez.
Well, starting out with my bottom of the barrel, sadly, Rebel Moon, which AKA unbeknownst to me is just A Bug's Life.
See, I never saw Bug's Life, so I kind of like Rebel Moon.
Magnificent Seven. In space, but the problem. The problem was that probably about 4 minutes in, I said to myself, wow, this is a lot like A Bug's Life. And then I said, oh, but wait, what it would happen if they had to go get legendary warriors from around the world to help come defend their farm that no one gives a shit about. Oh, guess what? It's Last Samurai. It's
Seven Samurai.
It is Magnificent Seven. It is exactly a rehash, which I think there were parts that were well done.
I just want more Anthony Hopkins robot. And there was
very little of that.
Too less of that. There just wasn't enough. But I felt like that was the most interesting part. And it sort of gave us a little bit here, and then like right at the end, like he's almost like a druid robot, you know, wearing his fetishes and his antlers and that sort of thing.
Need to watch this.
Half of the movie is in slow motion, and it gets so damn repetitive. You're like, I get it. Dramatic effect of like guns being fired, but you know what made Starship Troopers such a great film? Zero. Or like, no, I wouldn't say zero slow motion, but like minimal and dizzy, but minimal slow motion. Keep that shit rolling. I want people dying, body parts flying.
A textbook answer.
Keep moving.
Everyone fights, no one quits.
All right. Drew, what's a, do you have a like next ring above?
A next ring above something that was actually pretty good. I'm looking through like the last month of my letterbox. You know what? I'll bounce back and forth between something like that and something good. So I'm not a huge sports fan, okay? But I was kind of like directed towards a movie as part of my like year-long scavenger hunt. The category was a family member needs to recommend a movie that they think is good. And my brother just says, ooh, have you seen Moneyball? And so I've never seen Moneyball. Yeah. And I watched it and I was pleasantly surprised. It's such good storytelling. And I think Brad Pitt does a great job. It's just, it's intriguing. Yep. You're engaged with these like real life kind of obviously characters. And it's a different side. It's kind of like watching, what was the Star Wars show where we saw like the business side of the dark side? Yeah, it was like watching Andor. You know what I mean? Like you got to see like the militaristic business side of it, which I found super intriguing. And this, you're seeing the side where it's like, oh, yeah, like it kind of sucks. You may have a guy like mid-season and boom, he's traded.
Well, and just going more with saying, hey, why instead of going for the traditional way that we've been scouting and looking, we are going to make a team because we don't have the money that other teams have. We're going to make a team based off of statistics of individuals and put them together to create a winning formula. And it kind of
I guess it like changed the whole scouting field.
Game changing.
It was literally game changing. And I guess a bunch of different people across the nation were starting to use this style after that. And I was like, that's great. It was a really well done movie. And I was very pleasantly surprised with it.
Yeah, good call. I like that. Jack, what about you?
Well, since I've become a real John Cena fan in the past couple of years.
What
did you guys see Ricky Stenhouse?
Not yet. I hear it's fantastic. Not yet.
All right, it's not his best work. The movie itself is sort of subpar in its way, but Ricky Stenhouse, played by John Cena and William H. Macy in that movie, make it. And there is a montage that's easily found on YouTube, because before the background is that these three friends have been blaming all of their problems and absences on an imaginary friend named Ricky Stenhouse
for like 25 years.
Yeah, for over 20 years. So like they're adults now, and they basically get trapped where they have to produce Ricky Stenhouse in the flesh, or else the wives, the mothers, everyone's going to know that they're made up. And Ricky Stenhouse, or John Cena's character, has been playing this rock hard Rod, who does like sort of little entertainment shows, at strip shows and burlesques. And I'm just going to preview for you guys one of the examples of the songs that he does dressed up in character. And one of them is he's dressed up as Boy George. And it's come and my sock again. It's full of loads. Oh. It's full of loads. Like, he's just chewing up the scenery with the writing that he's getting. Now, Zac Efron's in it. Some other folks are in it. They're all sort of tertiary to the antics of John Cena, and right. I really did enjoy the Stanicky.
That's
and when you talk about scene chewing, we're talking irons. Shit, I miss this. Well, I will definitely have to watch it. I think that it's been on the radar. Something that came on the radar that me and the lady watched, it's called Cherry, which is with Tom Holland. It takes some very interesting directions. I wouldn't say that it's a movie that like I would recommend like wholeheartedly, but it's something that, you know, if you stumble across it and you're kind of like, well, let's give this a go. Drugs, damn. That's meth is a hell of a drug, you know. Drugs are wild to watch how it changes people, and he does a phenomenal job of someone with war experiences that just goes down a stumbled past and starts robbing banks, and it's interesting. It's not his best work by any means, but I don't fault him for doing it by any, you know, it's not something that, I don't feel like it's a step back for him. It was just kind of a lateral move of, and I did a film. I think it's on Apple TV. There it is. You know, it's Tom Holland. It can't do a ton of wrong. So yeah.
So a switchover from movies, I'm going to go to a TV show, an Amazon Prime TV show. I watched both seasons of Reacher, which was a lot of fun, honestly.
They call that Mad TV. And I know, because I've watched it as well. I've read some of the books. There's like 30 books. I think I've only read maybe less than 5.
Okay.
There were the 2 Tom Cruise movies, which weren't bad, but part of Reacher's whole mentality or sort of presentation is that he's my height.
And he's burly.
Fucking ripped as shit. And that doesn't translate on the silver screen too well with Tom Cruise is like fucking 5'8 ass.
Is he even that tall?
With
platforms. Yeah.
So I enjoyed both seasons of Reacher. But I still I like the main actor that plays them, but I also think he's sort of like, he could maybe use a few more acting lessons.
Maybe. No, I agree. I agree. I think his almost like deadpan kind of way for delivery is really funny, where they say like, I don't understand, we moved. Like, did you pack? And he pulls out the toothbrush. He's like, yeah, I packed.
Yeah.
Or when they ransack the hotel room and they go through all the drawers and he goes to the bathroom and they've snapped his toothbrush in half and he's like, great, now I own nothing. Because this whole thing is that he just has this like bohemian lifestyle and he's traveling and he's no longer part of like the special team. Like their whole like montage is like, nobody fucks with special team. And it's a very entertaining show. Also for like an Amazon Prime original, I wasn't expecting as many boobs as were on there, which again, pleasantly surprised.
But he always acts surprised.
Well, except for the one scene in the shower, he's all like, he's just like standing there, water's running down him, and suddenly she just walks in, full Newton, and you're like, oh. And he's like, oh, okay, I was wondering when you were going to get here. Sad it was that, but Great little show. Great action.
Well, that's interesting, though, because another...
No, you're fine.
Not to skip you, Jack. We will come right back to you. But another Amazon Prime that had absolutely zero boobs compared to the original...
You can't compare it to the original. No, you can't. Zero fucking nails. Not one. Like, if you're gonna remake Roadhouse, you gotta rip at least one to three throats out. And I rewatched Roadhouse and I was pleasantly surprised. It still holds up. Oh god, this is such a fun fucking movie.
Sam Elliott coming in, you're just like, and that's what I think the new film.
It lacks Sam Elliott.
It lacked a good Sam Elliott. It lacked the, hey, mija. Like, oh, and God,
I've got mixed feelings about Conor McGregor in that movie because I feel like either A,
same.
He fucking nailed it, or B, he's just playing himself. And I'm not sure which is which is. And I sent you guys a text message about this, but Conor McGregor's character in the Roadhouse remake just reminds me of every time that they had Mel Gibson on South Park back in the day. Like, unhinged, like, gonna just, like, grab a dookie out of his butt and smear it on the wall while he's yelling kapla in Klingon while driving a flaming fucking bus.
And I don't think that he, like you said, I don't think he did a bad job. I think that he, they said, hey, let's just see what you got. Just, here's the script. And he read it. Hey, brother. Like, it was very,
no.
Very deliberate with it. And they're like, you know what? Fuck it.
Let's I feel just, like if the producers like, paid for McGregor's coke, like, they got a good deal. They got what they paid for out of that. Jesus.
But still, all the boobs are completely misplaced. They're not here. They are in other Amazon Prime footage. This one was much more just, hey, we really want to, like, do some octagon fighting and have...
Maybe the boobs are there if you pay for the $3 for no commercials on Amazon Prime.
They're not. They're not. They're not. Yeah.
Can verify.
Not even pasties.
They're not.
So, if we're going to do slightly interesting movies, then I watched one on Hulu last weekend called Slayers with Thomas Jane and Abigail Breslin. Now, this is one of the hardest movies I've watched because the first half is almost unwatchable. Like, the whole preamble for the first half is terrible.
All I've seen is like acting a title card.
Is terrible.
It's bad.
I feel like Thomas Jane owed somebody a favor, and that's the only reason that he's in this. But they make up for it in the last half. And in the last half, they suddenly start throwing out random bits of lore.
Okay.
And history and background, and it's always Thomas Jane narrating.
Uh-huh.
The lore is fucking great. Like, they should have just started with the lore and skipped, like, the four or five influencers that live in a house that are going to meet this guy who, spoiler alert, it's a vampire. It's fucking hilarious. And then the final fight scene at the end with Thomas Jane, Abigail Breslin, and like the two, you know, big old vampires had me almost in tears. It was so funny. Like, there were more air horn blows during that last fight.
No,
that I recommend it, but I don't. I was like, if you can get through the first 40 minutes of this 90-minute movie, then finish it. If you don't think you can, I do not blame you. But it is worth the payoff.
Okay.
Pull the ripcord. Yeah. So I, with the new lady, she has introduced me to some anime that I have always steered away
from. One Piece.
And
Not just one.
I mean,
I'm more of a two-piece guy.
Oh yeah. So we have three that we're going to talk about. I'll keep them brief so that way we can. So first one, One Piece, starting from the beginning, OG, very nacho cheese. Nothing but just kind of it's
and
fun.
The anime version, not the
manga, or not, correct, not the live correct. Action. Well, okay. Sorry,
I haven't seen either. But
the second anime is called Delicious in Dungeon. It's on Netflix right now, and for some reason, I kind of like it. It's definitely a little bit more substance than I'd say with like One Piece, but still very stupid and fun, and kind of Dungeons and Dragony. So I'm in. And the third one is Death Note. Holy fucking shit. I like it. I am almost done with it. And I feel that it is a very well-crafted anime. And there's probably for the two or three people that are listening to this going, oh my God, dude. Like, you're just now getting into fucking Death Note? Like, what a loot. You know, but hey, it's good. And I'm in for it. So, okay. So yeah.
Kind of still, now it's like middle ground. It's only going to go up from here. So I watched recently, what was it called? It was called, Land of Bad. Okay. So Land of Bad is.
Where is this?
It's on Prime. It's a 2024 movie. Okay, so Liam Hemsworth, Russell Crowe, Luke Hemsworth, Rick
the lesser Ricky of Whittle. The Hemsworths.
From the Hemsworth, shut up. Okay, so here's how I would describe Land of Bat. It is a modern take on Behind Enemy Lines, formerly with Owen Wilson and Gene Hackman.
Wow. That's a good, well, no. Owen Wilson and Gene Hackman? Owen Wilson's the fighter pilot get shot down like Bosnia or something. Yeah, okay.
So this is like a modern take on that. Like Liam Hemsworth gets stuck behind enemy lines when his team is going in to extract an asset. His team gets taken out, and you have Russell Crowe at like HQ on a computer via a drone that's flying around. Where he can kind of follow him around and like, you know, try to track him down or like, you know, then the drone, you know, gets shot down or anything like that. But Russell Crowe's like always at the computer for a majority of the film. And he keeps talking to him via mic and whether the guy gets captured.
Does he say either of these two phrases? Enhance or I mean?
He might say I'm in if I'm not mistaken. Unless they see that, or he says like I'm good to go.
Would we say that this was a very Sean Connery Highlander like fly in for 2 weeks, record some shit in the bathroom, and say that's good enough for that? Well, I'll be on the golf course.
No, but it's still very much like it's very pudgy Sean Connery, or I mean Russell Crowe. Still, he's still very Pope's Exorcist.
I'll still watch kind of five movies,
which I 100% will watch because
I'm still in for Russell Crowe.
Because I think Russell Crowe's at a point in his life and his career where he's all like, I don't care if I'm like, you know, 50, 60 pound overweight. If they fucking hire me, I'm going to take it. Like, they're going to fucking deal with me. Because here's the thing. He's not out there like running around with a gun trying to save this guy. He's literally at a base in Vegas at a computer. And he's talking to the guy, you know, via his comms. But it is a modern Behind Enemy Lines. And I will say that some of the fight scenes are crazy good. And there's like some twists that you do not expect. I think I still overall enjoy Owen Wilson and Gene Hackman's Behind Enemy Lines more. This movie is still good. It's still good.
Well, if we're talking about war movies, I'm going to hit you guys with a war series, World War II war series. Not Masters of the Year yet, but okay. This was, and I feel that Apple Plus has been critically overlooked as far as some of the shows that they put out. But I've gained a lot of respect for the actor Ben Mendelsohn, who he played like sort of the bad guy who was the good guy in Miss Marvel. And then he was in the HBO series, horror series, which was like Other Things, where he played like a sheriff. But he plays Christian Dior in the Apple TV Plus series, The New Look. Christian Dior was a famous fashion designer. Coco Chanel is also in it.
Okay.
And it's the very, and I was like, oh, this is going to be good. It was wonderful. It's got John Malkovich in it in the supporting role. It's got Arya from the Game of Thrones,
right,
playing the sister, and she's doing like French Resistance stuff. It opens at sort of the beginning of the end of World War II in France. And it was an absolute joy to watch. Ben Mendelsohn was fucking fantastic in it, playing a gay fashion designer. So, like, it has a lot of interesting elements that it brings together, and its story is quite compelling.
It's quite cool. It's been a while since I watched it, but quick little, just a mini shout out to White Lotus, which we may or may not have talked about the last time that we got together, but White Lotus was
two seasons
fantastic. just a great watch that I did not expect, and I'm looking forward to the third season, and just kind of leave that at that. The show that I feel like I've kind of my comfort going back to, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
R.I.P. Andre Brower.
Tell me about it. But still, it's just good to like kind of have a show that I can put on when I have no clue on what I want to watch, but I want something just on, and just. That is my go-to right now as far as channel TV coasting.
Point ups. It's the Pang Pound.
Terry's getting upset. Yeah.
All right. Two movies I gave like 4 stars to. I'm going to kind of just quickly talk about both because they're both at like a match. So 2023's Anatomy of a Fall, which was up for an Academy Award.
I watched like the first 5 minutes and it was in a mood that I was like, I don't think I'm in the mood to watch this right now. It seems very slow and meticulous. Am I wrong?
No, it is.
Okay. Well, so I'll get to it at some point.
It's good.
But did you enjoy it?
Yes, very much so. I was very much like into it. And even for a movie that is like partially foreign language, and you know, I mean, I watch everything in subtitles anyways, but I don't remember that I actually like paused it to go like, oh, how much is left? Okay. So I very much enjoyed it. And another one that it's not that it was up for an Academy Award. I can totally see why. Characters are compelling. The story is good. And I won't give away the ending, but like you're almost frustrated with the ending, but you're okay with it in a sense as well. Another movie I'd never seen before from 1956, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Jimmy Stewart, John Wayne, absolutely loved it. Such a fun little movie. And it almost reminds me, not to discredit The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, but it almost reminds me of like Shakiest Gun in the West, where, you know, you have Jimmy Stewart. He's all like, well, I'm just a lawyer. It's like, I've never like fired a gun to shoot anybody. And John Wayne's the drunken sheriff who's after the gal and he can't really, you know, win anybody over in town. He's just like known as like the guy who's going to throw his weight around. He'll protect him. That's all they're kind of like acknowledging him for. Mm. But he wants more out of life. But it's a darn good film.
So to dovetail off of Anatomy of a Fall,
yeah,
another movie that was also had some Oscar buzz that I watched last weekend was Zone of Interest.
I hear that shit is heavy as fuck.
Well, it's not Schindler's List heavy.
Okay.
It's more Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
That's still
heavy. Which is still pretty heavy. Well, yeah. But I mean, I think it just gets heavier the more you get into it.
It's not Jacob the Liar.
Oh, I do love that movie.
You know, Life is Beautiful.
But what I liked about Zone of Interest was how it was shot.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm doing a disservice to it by describing it almost like a found footage.
Hmm.
Because it's shot in a very removed perspective.
Okay.
There's almost no motion or panning shots. The only one I can really recall is you know, the Jewish prisoner bringing groceries to the commandant's house, and they're just panning across their beautiful garden and then the wall with the arc in barbed wire. But the rest of it is shot very stationary, or moving around in different single shots in the same scene. And there's no real close-up. So everything is shot as these are people in a room. And this is their conversation, or it's shot, you know, this is what this person in the house is doing, and you can hear other things going on in the house. So it's beautiful, but also the casual horror of the movie is what really drives it home.
Mm.
So that shot that I talked about where the Jewish prisoner, the concentration camp prisoner, is bringing groceries in a wheelbarrow up in their panning. Yes, there are groceries in it, but also there is a bag of nylons that the commandant's wife then offers up to the servants in her house. Like, oh, just take something. Well, where did these nylons come from? And then at the bottom of the grocery bag is a mink. And then there's a scene upstairs where you see the commandant's wife sort of modeling the coat in the mirror, and then she finds like a stainless, or it's not stainless, but a silver lipstick tube
case, yeah,
that still has lipstick in it, and she just sort of rubs it off on her forearm and then puts some on her face, and it's like, well, do you not know where this coat came from? Whose lipstick this was before? It's that sort of like, again, the casual hysteria of like, that entire time.
Like this, the code could have clearly come from like a Jewish home.
Of course.
Of course it. Okay. Of course it did. Yeah.
Again, its cinematography and its direction, I think it probably deserved a little bit more than Barbie and the Oscars or Oppenheimer. But, you know, I watched Barbie, I watched Oppenheimer. Barbie was what I expected it to be. Michael Cera was the standout star of that, in my opinion. And Oppenheimer, I kind of found very boring.
So, I think Oppenheimer could have been easily a good 20 minutes shorter. But also,
easy.
Okay, super boring first third. Second third, we're picking up steam, and you're actually kind of getting engaged a bit more. And then finally, with that last third, the ending, you're like, wowza, okay, now we're into it. And whoa, this is what happened with this trial? Like, you get so angry. And like the way that they're just being so fucking like coy and shady with it, like, you know, his lawyer's all like, this is the first time I'm hearing about this. Can I see those? Oh, I'm sorry. It's classified. Well, then how are you using it here? And this, like, I object. Dude, calm down. It's not a trial.
Oppenheimer
like,
was a
fucking treat it like it's a
Oppenheimer
trial.
Oppenheimer was a great movie about McCarthyism.
Yeah.
It just wasn't advertised as a movie about McCarthyism.
I wonder if Truman's actual like, quote, like, don't bring that crybaby in here again, my office ever again. $5 says that was a real quote. I bet Oppenheimer's all like, or not Oppenheimer. Yeah. Yeah. I bet it was Oppenheimer saying like, yeah, he said this as I left. Like, $5 says that's right.
Yeah. It definitely was not. I compare it a little bit to, in a weird way, A Beautiful Mind. And think, okay, of movies that like I found interesting, that I kind of was like, okay, I'm following you, lead. A Beautiful Mind took me down a path that I did not expect it to, of just kind of back and forth, and had a really good payoff of this person who, very smart, very next level. Oppenheimer just kind of felt like, what was the point of all this? I understand like the bomb and all these, you know, aspects to it, but it just kind of was like, was that the story that I needed to be? Was that entertaining? And I don't know. There was so much hype behind
there
it.
Pretty much anything Christopher Nolan puts out at this point, I think he's going to get a lot of hype.
Like, there were parts where I almost thought, like, why was this needed? Like, you could have the same effect of what you were trying to get with a simple flashback. Okay, like, not that it wasn't, I guess, nice, but as she's writing him and saying, read the Sanskrit, please, like, that wasn't needed. Here's the thing. Like, that entire scene was unnecessary. It wasn't needed at all. Like, if they wanted purely the fact that, like, they wanted to integrate his relationship with her and how she was a communist and how that basically, like, could call his, you know, his security clearance, like, into question, and whether or not they're going to give it back to him or even give it to him at all or anything like that, just reference it and reference the fact that, fine, she killed herself. But you don't need, I guess, like, the buildup. Maybe even keep them meeting at the party. Keep them meeting on, like, maybe a quick social occasion. But I don't think you need, again, like, read the Sanskrit scene. It was very weird to have, like, the nude conversation in the hotel room.
Drew, I agree. Put the boobs back in Roadhouse.
Take them out of Oppenheimer.
We're all good. Yeah, right where it should, Jesus. Right where it belongs. The last movie that I've got, like, kind of the low and the high, Miller's Girl was not as good as I was expecting it to be, and had when I saw that Seth Rogen was one of the executive producers, I'm like, that makes a little bit more sense. How, like, it's just like, yeah, this is what you get. But the high. Dune 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Fantastic.
It just still got a theater. It's been picked up for Dune Messiah.
Then I won't go to... Yeah,
is that what's going to happen?
Jeff. Yeah, they picked up this past... Or last week.
Dune Messiah it is.
Which they don't really need to go past Children of Dune, because, like, Dune is very political. Dune Messiah and Dune... the Children of Dune are more... religious.
God Emperor of Dune.
And then you get into Chapter House and God Emperor of Dune, and that's just all philosophy.
You need a worm with a man's face?
Yes, apparently. And like, and just endless clones of Gurney, or not Gurney Halleck, but Duncan Idaho. At a certain point, the clones are going to go haywire, so they just kill that one and unfreeze another one. It's interesting.
And then we have Westworld.
Yeah. Or Moon. So I feel like we need to get into Masters of the Air. The show that was supposed to carry the laurel of Band of Brothers in the Pacific into a new generation. I thought it did a fairly good job. I read the book or listened to the book on Audible as the show is going on. But it's one of those books, sort of like the Pacific, which, you know, wasn't a book. It was based on various sources, but can't quite capture the magic of Band of Brothers, because it's not about one, you know, squad or one platoon or one company.
Yeah.
This was an entire Air Force, the 8th Air Force. So there's a lot of good actors in it, but some of them kind of come and go. And then their stories are sort of very truncated. So I enjoyed it. And they're like, oh, is there going to be a season two? I was like, well, no, the war ended. But you could do something else. I still think they need to do a naval book about the Pacific War. I mean, we already had...
Midway?
Well, no, we already had Tom Hanks Groundhog. In Greyhound. And, that, and really sort of
that's
do Greyhound. Sort of the Atlantic convoy runs. But I think that if they're going to do another Band of Brothers, you know, season four, that it should be the Navy, especially the destroyers, in the Pacific Laffy theater.
World War II. Like there's so many good stories that they can kind of pull from. But I agree from what I did watch, it really didn't draw me in. Band of Brothers just has the magic. It had everything that it needed to have, the authenticity. I can't say that word that well. The shots, the action, but yet not being like embellished. You know, it didn't feel like it was like Midway. Midway felt very like
meh.
America,
yeah. Like, oh, cue Ride of the Valkyries. Like, oh, like, yeah, we get it. Yeah, just Jeremy Irons.
Actually, in Midway, they had Jeremy Irons doing the sound effects for the anti-aircraft guns. But dovetailing on to disappointing sequels. The True Detective Night Country. Did any of you guys watch that?
I didn't get into it. I want to because I like Jodie Foster a lot.
So in my opinion, you know, like top five TV series, True Detective season one, The Wire, some of The Sopranos are right in there. But True Detective season one, if you've never watched it all the way through, it's a masterpiece. It's a fucking masterpiece. Season one. Season two.
Oh, yeah.
Not great. Season three was actually pretty fucking good. This is the fourth season of True Detective. Jodie Foster and some folks that most people probably wouldn't recognize. And it fucking sucked. And
disappointing.
It kind of gets into what constitutes a season anymore.
Sure.
You know, because we used to watch Star Trek and you would get 22, 24, 25 episodes out of a season. So I think we got like 7 episodes from True Detective season 4. And so
it's not quite a mini series, because like a mini series is almost like 3 or 4.
Yeah, right? Or like a limited series is like 4 or 5. Yeah. But it started out the first episode great, and then by the penultimate episode, the episode right before the last one, it's like they're gonna finish it up in one episode in an hour. I feel like they need 4 or 5 more episodes, because the last 3 episodes you've given me nothing but fucking filler. And who's Jodie Foster getting drunk and fucking? It didn't focus on the crime as much as it focused on the background issues of the crime, which is understandable, but it was just very, very disappointing. And they're like, oh, we're going to do another season, but not with Jodie Foster, because you guys didn't like that one. I was really looking forward to True Detective Night Country, and it was very, very disappointing.
That's disappointing. I mean, it isn't out yet, but since you did mention Star Trek, I'm very excited for the next season and final season
Oh, it's out.
Oh, it's already out?
Well, the first two episodes dropped last Wednesday. Discovery? Or Thursday.
Yeah. I need to watch it.
Which...
I didn't even know. I've been so busy.
I like Discovery. Yeah, it's the last season. Discovery sort of screwed itself by trying to be... And I'm using this sparingly. The most fucking woke Star Trek out there. And Star Trek has always been woke. You know, for Captain Kirk kissing Uhura in the 1960s was about as fucking woke as that era got.
The whole black and white exactly. alien race that's just the opposite, yet they want to kill each other because they're differences.
Exactly. Star Trek Discovery had a few problems. A, didn't know what it wanted to be until like the third or fourth season. Because at first it starts out as a prequel, and then it
jump to the future,
and then they jump like way the fuck into the future. The fourth season was fantastic, but they sort of got caught in their own like continuous loop of like how diverse can we make this cast, you know, and it throws a lot out there, and it becomes that the story is no longer Star Trek. It's about sort of the conflicts and problems of the diversified cast. So, you know, you've got the love interest between the Doctor and what was it, Michael Rappaport? No, that's the engineer, which is fine, is fine. But then on top of that, you've got sort of the weird dovetailed Kranz story with the girl they find and the Krill that she was holding on to. You've got sort of the chubby fat girl who you know gets to make good. But it seems like most of the stories weren't Star Trek. They were just Star Trek used as a guise for very, very different type of storytelling.
Although, I enjoyed all of it.
I still watch it. It's still Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'll watch all the episodes, but for my money,
Strange New Worlds...
I will
attest and I will agree. Strange New Worlds does beat Discovery for me.
It's got the acting, it's got the storytelling, storytelling is able to move forward without getting so hung up upon its own.
And to the fact that like you do have certain stories that you actually get like super emotionally involved in, like the fact that the Doctor has to keep his felony crime where he keeps his daughter in stasis because he can't cure her, and if he keeps her out too long then she's gonna die, and she wakes, you know, she comes out of stasis in the transporter buffer and she's like, hey dad, are you gonna read me the story? And he's like, yes, I will read you the story. And he reads her the same story every fucking night. And she doesn't realize it because she's in the transporter buffer and like her pattern is there.
And that was actually one of the weaker storylines, which they got rid of.
Engaging with it. But then you find out he's a war criminal.
Well,
war criminal.
War criminal, but
limited series.
But yeah, that episode where the another Wire alumni comes on and plays that Klingon who was, you know, like the butcher of, you know, whatever, Kastan.
That is the twist.
That episode was fucking fantastic. And that was great, great Star Trek. And it was evocative and it had you invested, which I can't get that investment from Discovery. So you'll watch the first episode of the new season, Discovery, Drew, and they introduce a new captain.
Okay.
That sort of goes on some of the adventures with Michael Burnham.
Okay.
And the other Discovery cast members. But it's sort of like either one side of the coin or the other. You could be Michael Burnham, where this is Star Trek and we can't chase the bad guys anymore because the bad guys cause an avalanche. And we're going to have to this village of 1,000 people from the avalanche. Meanwhile, you've got the other captain who's like, Well, there's a 70% chance that'll happen, but there's a 30% there won't. Let's go after the bad guys. And it's sort of like, well, we have to either save all the people or do nothing. And
Okay.
Nathan, you should go ahead and since we just did five or ten minutes of Star Trek there.
Yeah, no, for all of us non-Star Trek listeners, for all two of
mark
us.
Mark your bingo here, cards.
You know. Yeah, mark your fucking bingo cards. Blow the dust off them, because boy, howdy, it's live. Yeah, no, I think that unless you guys got more to hash out, I think that should do it for our what have you been watching. Is there anything else that you guys,
Shogun.
Any other?
Oh, Shogun's fantastic. Shogun's very, very good. Something that is coming to Shudder, I will be very excited about, which you, Nathan, did ask me about. Late Night with the Devil.
David Dobeschen.
Is coming to Shudder this weekend.
Looks fucking
I've
terrifying.
I've heard nothing but great things. But, my coworker went and saw it, and she said,
exactly.
Movie was shit. And I'm like, no, because like 99% of America or the world is saying otherwise.
Yeah.
He said she fell asleep twice during the film. So I'm going to take her opinion with a grain of salt on that. But
before we conclude, what is the last film that absolutely like caught you terrified? You were like, holy shit, that is kind of
when
scary.
When Evil Lurks. Is probably one of the most unsettling films on Shudder that I have watched recently. It's a foreign language horror, very much a body horror in a lot of different aspects. Horrifying, very visceral, very graphic.
So,
Jack, yeah?
I think it was one of the last horror movies that I was pleasantly surprised with. Was one of A24's Talk to Me, which has like the mummified hand. It's got a lot like sort of like a lot of the monkey paw aspect to it. But I was pleasantly surprised by Talk to Me with the direction it went. It didn't go the way I think it did. And just how they portrayed you know, the whole thing is that you light a candle, you grip this mummified hand and say, talk to me. And then it's sort of like a portal for dead people. And they can sort of inhabit your body, but you're not supposed to allow them to do it for a certain amount of time or else.
It's like a Ouija board kind of concept. And so you can say, like, I let you in, and they can possess you for a short time, and then I guess it's only like for a minute or something, and then you're supposed to, like, people on the outside are supposed to, like, remove your hand, and that takes the...
And blow out the candle.
Yeah, and blow out the candle, and then that takes the spirit away, but kind of like if you don't blow out the candle or if you go too long, it's kind of like walking away from a Ouija board without saying goodbye. Like, the doorway is still open. Talk to Me, I think, was a fantastic debut movie for two brothers who started off as YouTubers. And the quality of this film for how little budget and what they did, I think is phenomenal. I think it has one of the better opening scenes in horror in the last decade. And then the practical effects of when like the brother's in the bathroom and he slams his head onto the floor.
It's tough to watch.
Super graphic. Super graphic. Okay. Other than that, I know I kind of gave a little spiel on it in one of my little, like, what have you been watchings. I kind of described it as, like, if you want a movie where you get frustrated at stupid teenagers that are doing stupid things, then this is your movie. But it's impressive for what it was for first-time filmmakers.
There we go. Good shit. Well,
I think that's going to be about what we have for what are you watching. Coming up, we're going to get back into the swing of things. We're going to pick back up where we left off with my archaeology film, which was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
You must go to Bangkok Palace to find
monkey brains.
The stones. The stones.
This is more they eat in a week. Dr. Jones!
Everything goes.
So, yeah. Well, we are back, and back. I could not be happier. So,
thank you for listening to us on our What Are You Watching? With Jack, Drew, and Nathan.
You guys can always look for us up on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for the Real Feels Podcast. On Twitter, we are at Real Feels Pod. Be sure to give a call to the Tooch Line, 661-376-3030.
I dare you. I fucking dare you out there to call the Tooch Line.
I think you got the number right. I haven't said it in so long. Guys, the Tooch Line number is our show notes. I should know my own like Tooch Line number. But hey, give us a call on the Tooch Line. Send us an email at realfeelspodcast@gmail.com. If you want to see what I'm watching, my letterbox link is in the show notes. But guys, thank you for joining us. We are glad to be back. We love you guys. You're the realist. I'm happy again.
Oh.